Hello, East is a Podcast listeners. This is Nick Estes, the host of the Red Nation podcast. Some of you may know that Sina has been a producer on our podcast since we first launched in 2019. And our show, featuring Indigenous left analysis and histories, would not have been possible or as successful without his help. If you're like me, you've enjoyed the evolution of East as a podcast over the years, very much keeping alive an anti-imperialism we desperately need in this moment of terrible danger. Please consider becoming a Patreon supporter to the East as a podcast so that this important work can continue. Thank you so much. Wopila.
Put at the end of convert save. Maybe this is, yeah, okay, I think it is. And I just do convert save, whatever. Anyways, this is going to be mostly about you.
Why?
Because this is, you've been interpolated by these freaks on the internet as their bête noire, so to speak, because you represent a very threatening movement called Land Back, which is in fact counter to the working class interests of Americans, I've been told, by these people who call themselves socialist patriots. Socialist patriots.
So first of all, I never agreed to debate this. I've been asked by several people to debate this. We talked a little bit about it on Fear of a White Genocide with the DSA International Committee, because we just kind of surmised that U.S. foreign policy is premised on this kind of counter-annihilation thesis, where essentially, like, you have to kill the people that threaten you before they kill you. And then somehow, you know, the Great Replacement Theory, which is now becoming mainstream by people like Glenn Greenwald and Tucker Carlson.
Same person.
Yeah, it was, he recently did a podcast stream on like defending Tucker Carlson's use of the Great Replacement Theory, which has its origins in kind of, like, not kind of, but it has its origins in white nationalist fears. And I feel like there's a lot of the same kind of sentiment in the so-called socialist patriotism movement. And I think it's important to, like, actually, like, there's nothing wrong with being a socialist and a patriot.
There is.
No, but listen to me. You don't let me finish. Because it's confusing, because they're actually saying U.S. patriotism. There's a big difference there. Yeah, it's like saying I'm an Israeli Zionist patriot. And then I'm also, and that means I'm a socialist. And that's like, that's a unifying, that's going to bring together the multinational working class. And it's like, it's not. Like, it's a very strange move to make, because fundamentally Israeli nationalism and so-called patriotism is an exclusionary project. So too is the U.S. nationalism and patriotism, right? And there's this attempt, and I read this article, which is like a weird, it's a very strange use of like George Orwell's distinction between patriotism and nationalism, which I found kind of interesting, but it didn't really like elaborate so much on that. However, I think it's important to point out that patriotism as an alliance to kind of rebuilding a U.S. nationalism is a bankrupt project, because it's fundamentally defending, like, it has no comparison to Latin America, because most Latin American countries, nearly all of them, with the minor exception of a few, were not built as nation states that were inherently settler colonial and expansionist. Some of them were settler colonial, and most of the world isn't, right? And so that's the difference. The U.S., like, patriot to what? The 13 original colonies? I want to ask that question.
The Mayflower?
Like, you have to ask that question. It's like,
why are we even here?
Because people get angry at me when I say the word pilgrim, or when I call people pilgrim, and the reason why I do it is because it's funny. Yeah, first of all, it's funny. Like, people wearing buckles on their heads is hilarious, but
pilgrim, you're going to need a couple of stitches.
The pilgrims themselves, the so-called pilgrims, didn't even call themselves pilgrims. It's a fantasy.
Whoa, take her easy there, pilgrim.
Much like this idea that there's some kind of trans-historical patriotism. How is that project different than the 1776 project that Trump commissioned, in contradiction or as a counter argument to the 1619 project? It argues this kind of trans-historical narrative that, like, patriotism and ideals of freedom were always the same at the same time, and, oh, we were just deviating from this path And it was a self-correcting path, because the founders themselves, the reason why this nation exists because of slaveholders, genociders, and colonizers, was actually not so much a deviation, but it was their aspiration to become more equal and free. And it's like, read the Declaration of Independence. Like, the last, there's 23 grievances, and it's no accident that the 23rd grievance against the king itself is about crushing black resistance. Why? Why crush black resistance in
resistance to whom?
1776. Exactly. It's because there was a growing abolitionist movement in the British colonies, not so much in the United States, what became the United States in the 13 colonies, but in the Caribbean. Like, read Gerald Horn. That's what counter-revolution of 1776 is. That's why the so-called founders wrote in that document that the King George was trying to inspire domestic insurrections, or whatever it was, domestic rebellion amongst us. It was specifically talking about slave revolts and the killing of white masters, right? That's one patriotic duty that these original patriots were a part of. The second one, in the same 23rd grievance, was, you know, the merciless Indian savages, whose only known rule of warfare is like killing women and children on our western frontiers. That's the other part of it. They managed to put black and indigenous people in the same grievance. And so the counter-annihilation thesis there is to say that it wasn't the colonists, it wasn't the Anglo settlers that were engaging in irregular counterinsurgency genocidal warfare. Their invasion was actually a form of self-defense. They had to kill indigenous peoples because we were merciless Indian savages. So your patriotism to a country is founded on those two premises. And of course, that evolves into the annexation of billions of acres of territory in less than a century. There's no nation in history, no state in history that has that kind of expansionist and genocidal history. It is a form of, I mean, I'm not to say like it's a U.S. exceptionalism for
just
for,
say that. But I was for just the other say reason, that. You took my line. It's actually true.
It's true.
The U.S. But for is the exceptional. Wrong reasons. They're exceptionally evil. Yeah, but for the exceptionally wrong evil. That's what's so funny, is that they're actually very smart by calling it American exceptionalism. Exception to what? Normalcy. Yeah. Americans are a far and above, and that's impressive given what the Brits did. I mean, the thing is, too, there's an artificial, now we're back to a different thing of who's worse, Americans or the Brits? Like, it's impossible to really, because you can't separate them. The moment you interlace British imperial history with the story of this country that they're talking about, that they're so patriotically talking about, the moment you put those two huge Lego pieces back together, you say, there's a larger story here. So what am I celebrating exactly? What am I being proud of? What did these people do? What did this island of people, with the assistance of half a continent of Europe, do to this place that I live in now? And it's like, so do they not eat like that? You know what's really shocking? I had Midwestern Marx. There's an article, we should talk about that. It's called In Defense of US Proletarian Patriotism. Calm Rally to Response, that who cares, whatever. You can look it up yourself. I had the Midwestern Marx guys on my show. Shortly, I had never seen anything from this. Until that time, until shortly after I published the episode, I started seeing this weird thread of like nationalist communism, which doesn't exist, which shouldn't exist in a country like the US. Like, in our context, we should not be proud of the US in any of its iterations, like even in its idealist iterations, which is their defense, right? They're like, oh, the project went wrong, but its ideals were correct, which is basically what the neocons say. Like, that's like a neocon way of thinking about conquest of the earth. It's like, oh, we had good principles or whatever, which is what's his name actually says in that horrible Vietnam documentary. And so it's like, have you guys not read the content on your own website? Like, that's like, you're the guy who says, are we the baddies? Like, you need to read the content on your own website before, because if you did, you wouldn't be coming to these conclusions. You wouldn't be so up in arms about the word land back. You wouldn't be so threatened by it. I don't know about specifically Midwestern Marx, But the thread of it is the same. It's kind of a twinning thing of like, there's this kind of hysterical response to Land Back, you know, which I want to address because...
Okay, that's the counter-annihilation thesis in play. It's somehow indigenous people are going to do to settlers, allegedly or whatever, what settlers did to indigenous people. And that's the silliest thing. It's like complete lack of imagination. Also, it's just so cynical and ridiculous. I mean, that's what Hitler said about Jewish people in Nazi Germany. Like, when you make the Hitler argument, I know people like walk out of the room, but you simply don't understand. It's like what, you know, Césaire was saying. It's like Nazism and fascism was Europe colonizing itself. Settler colonialism is a continual colonization of Europe of itself and the rest, you know, and what is now known as Turtle Island or North America, you know? And it's an endless cycle. Like, there is, you have to understand what settler colonialism is to have that conversation. There's two things that I would say. The first is it's a false to compare other kinds of forms of patriotism and nationalism that arise out of an anti-imperialist context. So, for example, everyone points to Latin America. Like, why is it that you have indigenous people and black folks in like Venezuela, you know, flying their tricolor? Or why is it that you have, you know, places like Bolivia that flies their tricolor as well as the Huipala, the indigenous flag? And why is it that there's a reverence for this tricolor, which is obviously comes from some kind of like European background or whatever? And it's to say, there's several answers to that. First of all, Venezuela wasn't formed as an expansionist state. It was formed in reaction to Spanish colonialism. You know, there were several things that went along with that, but I think the first is to say that over time, that nationalism bred itself against U.S. imperialism and against this idea. And, you know, there were mistakes made, but also there's a reason why Simón Bolívar went to a place like Haiti. And because Haiti was the first free country in the Western Hemisphere, what happened in Haiti? Oh, it completely defied the principles of the founding of the United States, saying that black people, first and foremost, should be free. And guess what they did? Everyone became a black citizen by constitutional law, even if they were white, you know? How offensive would that be to the frailties of contemporary, you know, white supremacy, right? Equality for whiteness is oppression. And that's the biggest fear. And it's not just at like an interpersonal level. It's not just like, oh, I'm in a, you know, on the street and this person's discriminating me. Not only structural, but it's also at a geopolitical level. When nations themselves begin to behave as equals, as indigenous nations, we should behave as equals because we're sovereigns. Because why do you don't sign a treaty with a minority? So if you want to renegotiate those treaties, fine, argue for that. But don't deny actual existing nations the right to exist. And don't frame it within the kind of supremacy liberal logic of the United States and its constitutional model, period. And it's also to go back to like the Venezuelan example. Guess who else was a patriot in Venezuela for quite a long time and killed a lot of people? Dictators. It's not an automatically like positive thing, even within indigenous communities. Like, why is that so hard to understand? Like, yeah, there are reactionary tendencies within patriotism and nationalism. Duh. Like, why is this a facile? Like, why do we have to go back to George Orwell and repeat and rehash his arguments? Like, this is the 21st century. Like, we're not living in Britain or the UK. We don't need a European dude who knows nothing about colonialism, who himself was a colonial. He went to India, you know, and was like a colonial, like,
yeah, fuck cop. Orwell. Fuck
so
Orwell.
So it's strange to me that you invoke Orwell, maybe not explicitly, but indirectly in his spirit, to make an argument against like anti-colonialism in the United States. My second point to that is what one of my good friends and comrades, Fidel, said to me when I was in Venezuela, when we were talking about indigenous and peasant revolts and the history of Sabino Romero, who was an indigenous leader, who, you know, was also a Bolivarian revolutionary. and didn't see a contradiction between, you know, Bolivarian nationalism as well as indigenous nationalism, and combined them in very effective ways. But one of the things that he, you know, he talked about was like, you can't impose contradictions on the people. You take what their grievance is, like this is a Gramscian notion, you take what is a common sense, right? There's almost a natural or an organic anti-imperialism and anti-colonialism amongst indigenous people.
Of the global South.
And people of the global South, you know, 98%, this is a survey that was done, or it was like 95 or 90, I think it was 95%. Let's lowball it. It was 95% of indigenous people in the United States surveyed by Illuminatives concluded or said that they didn't trust the federal government.